thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I am Wole. Here are my homies, Will T and Ray Gigi. Let me patch them in right now, so you know we've been doing the social distancing type of show. What's going on, fellas?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Good, man. Good. How is your Tuesdays going? Ray, you there? I hear you, man. You ain't say what's
up. I'm in the building, man. I'm just letting Will go first. You know we got to take turns, baby.
How is your Tuesday going, man? How is your day going?
Go ahead, bro.
This is amazing.
Hey, all is well, brother. You know, we can't change our answers up much these days because there's not much we can do. You know, I went to the grocery store this morning. I wore my mask.
Yeah.
I stayed 6 feet away from people. You know what I'm saying? It's
just, how serious are
just
you?
Another day during the coronavirus pandemic. That's all.
How serious are you with the 6 feet of distance when you go to the grocery store? Like, how, like, are you, like, do you make sure, like, do you pay attention to that? Or do you lose track of that?
I can tell you don't go out much because most stores now.
No, I do.
They are marked.
No, they are marked.
The floor is marked.
No, I know that. But sometimes I just kind of lose thought of it. Like I see and I just lose thought. And I'm like, oh shoot, I'm too close to this person.
Like, oh yeah, I had a near altercation in CVS one day because I walked up too close to a lady. But for the most part, you know, definitely the mask is a reminder.
Yeah.
And the empty shelves is a reminder that we're not living in normal times. So I definitely am conscientious of where I am, but you know, like everybody, I make mistakes because we've been living one way for 30 plus years, and now to have to alter our way of living is difficult. But again, we understand the significance and seriousness of this, and I definitely, like I said, am mindful of others and wanting everyone to be healthy.
Hey, Will T, does that happen to you? Like when you at the grocery store, you kind of like forget, like, hey.
Nah, see, I go to the grocery store outside of the Beltway,
okay.
So I don't encounter those problems.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the grocery store way in another county, which I'm not going to divulge on the radio, because it's actually a nice shopping experience when I go there. There's meat, there's everything I need there, so I'm not letting anyone. I'll let you both in on the secret.
All right,
once we go to commercial break.
All right, that sounds like a plan.
Yeah, because I need some garlic. Garlic is hard to come by, man. Good, though.
I'll tell you a spot, too, then. I'll tell you a spot where you can get that. You get garlic.
Oh, man, here we go.
I'm serious. I'll tell you. It'll be like real after the break.
Nah, I got some. Trust me. And I do quite okay.
Okay.
So thank you, guys.
I'm just trying to look out, man.
Okay,
man,
no problem, man. Shoot. No problem at all.
All right, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our new Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. We have everybody in terms of all communities, so make sure you check it out. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. The Skins draft over the weekend at 8:20. We'll talk about the Skins trading Trent Williams to the Niners. Finally, at 8:35, we'll discuss the MJ Bulls documentary, The Last Dance, episodes 3 and 4 aired on Sunday. But first, the Washington Redskins made it official by drafting defensive end Chase Young with the second pick overall. Your thoughts on the pick?
Ray, I'm letting you go first. Whole show, bro.
Yeah. I like that.
Are you deferring to me at this point?
The whole show.
I'm not deferring to you. I'm just doing the gentleman thing, and I'm letting you go first. That's all. Because I mean, you're not a regular.
The same thing. Okay.
You're not a regular on the show. So
wow, you're
a guest. So
I
let
early.
I let the guest go.
What? The guest? Damn.
I actually watch football, so that's why I'm going first. That's what it is. But so here's the thing. Chase Young, he has all of the skills. Everyone knows he's a star. You know, the way he responded to his suspension I thought was awesome last season. My only concern for Chase Young is being home. Kevin Durant has, you know, been on record numerous times stating how difficult it would be for him to play for the professional sports team in his hometown, just because of all the family, the friends, the many distractions. And I'm wondering how Chase Young is going to be able to balance that. And we won't know until the facilities reopen and he's able to step on that field. But overall, of course, you are getting one of the top players, if not the top player in the draft.
So I'm going to make my comment, but I'm going with a caveat. Wally, this isn't a dig at your team.
Of course, you go ahead.
So, okay.
Yeah.
No, so Ray, you brought up a great point about, you know, being home and, you know, the pressures or the distractions of being home. But let's talk about something that's obvious here. Losing, right? This franchise hasn't been, you know, hasn't had a strong track record of winning over the past decade.
Mm-hmm.
So how is Chase Young going to deal with, you know, coming from Ohio State, the team that consistently was in the running for national championships, then also playing at DeMatha, one of the most storied football programs in the area.
Mm-hmm.
How is he going to deal with losing, and how is that going to play on his psyche, you know, if Washington isn't able to turn things around this upcoming year?
No, it's a fair question.
And then there's also the pressure or the expectations, you know, number two overall. What we've seen from those guys, you know, who've been labeled like generational pass rushers, like Khalil Mack or a Von Miller or even a Jadeveon Clowney, you know, once they came into the league, they were able to make an instant impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does Chase Young try to, you know, does he put too much pressure on himself to try to make an instant impact and turn things around for that defensive front line?
Yeah,
I think you trust this regime. I really do. With a new coach who is well known and has a great track record for coaching up some top defenses, I believe that he'll fit in just fine. Chase Young is most compared to Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
And Clowney, I disagree, Will. He didn't have immediate impact. He actually struggled to start his career, considering the ginormous amount of expectations that he came into the league with. So I'm thinking that if you trust your coach, if you're teachable, again, if you can block out the distractions, I think he'll be fine. We're expecting him to have an immediate impact because he's that talented. However, again, he's just a rookie. He's still very young, still very raw. He's got a lot of learning to do, but I think he has the right coaches, not just coach, but he's got the right coaches in Jack Del Rio and Ron Rivera to help him do that.
And also he has like a player, you talk about, you know, people who, you know, being local, you had like Jonathan Allen, who's relatively local as well. So he can always lean on Jonathan Allen to say, okay, how is it, you know, you being from the area, you know, and, you know, expectations, and how do you kind of silence the noise, the outside noise, and just focus on football? So he has that in terms of the locker room. But in terms of talent, you expect, if you're that guy, right, to ball, regardless of the fact, you know what I mean? We all see draft picks that we think, looking out in college, thinking that they're going to be, you know, lights out once they get to the league, and they're not. You know, that happens in any multiple franchises and whatnot. But you expect for this individual to be a baller. This is, you had a guy like Larry Bosa, who played for the Niners, and we're always going to compare it because they both played on the same team, who was lights out, and Chase Young is graded higher than Bosa. So when you look, you can only expect that the Skins made the right pick because it's just a perfect fit. It's obvious, and also because you have two coaches in terms of Jack Del Rio and Ron Rivera, who are defensive-minded coaches and at a high level. So, you know, they've had players in the past that have kind of done well in their system. Ron Rivera with Peppers, Jack Del Rio in Jacksonville with the Raiders, with Khalil Mack. So he's had – these individuals have had experiences with players similar to what we see in Chase Young. Silent.
I mean, these are all valid points, but you know, it's, you know, the transition from playing, you know, college football to professional football is it could be a hard transition depending upon the player and depending upon the organization he's in. This organization hasn't had a great track record of, you know, of helping their high draft picks, transition from the collegiate to the pro, and getting, you know, top level production from them. So it'll be interesting to see, as Ray said, you know, with this new regime, you know, and without any off-season workouts, how Chase Young will transition.
Well, can I just say this real quick? I think the last two guys that I can think of on the defensive side of the ball that have had this much hype, well, actually three. There's three.
Mm-hmm.
There was Sean Taylor, of course, who came into the league with just, you know, crazy talent. You also had LeVar Arrington and Champ Bailey. And I think all three of them, in spite of the mess that Dan Snyder has at times seemed to run or create, they all excelled right out the gate.
Agreed. Mm-hmm.
So I think Chase Young can follow in the footsteps of those guys, again, considering like we've all been saying with the new coaching staff.
Yeah, and the players they've drafted defensively over even within this regime in terms of playing, because all you can do is show what you can do on the field. They played well. These guys haven't been bust. You know what I mean? Like, they're individuals out there who've been bust. These guys have been what folks expected them to be. Now, has it turned into wins? No, it hasn't. But in terms of on-the-field play, they've done their job. You know what I mean? Like, I've always credit to, like, Kyle Smith, who's now pretty much running, you know, the team in terms of following. I mean, in terms of finding talent. And he's done a great job in terms of some of these young players they've drafted and whatnot. So in terms of what they've done in the draft, they've done pretty well, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They've done well. It's all about you know, turning that into wins. You know what I mean? Like having the right culture in terms of front office and even in coaches too, just to develop, to cultivate that into W's.
Then you gotta call somebody's name after you done.
I know, you know what? You're right, dog. You're right. I have to learn.
I mean, we don't have FaceTime. You know, no one's FaceTiming
you're right.
each other.
All right,
so.
No, I'm going to the next topic. Other than Chase Young, the Chase Young pick, which Skins player has a chance to make an impact, you know, that you saw in the draft that they drafted?
Well, that's easy for me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because Khalik Hudson. To me, is the obvious choice out of Michigan. Wally, you are a Michigan fan.
Yes.
I'm not sure how familiar you are with him. However, by all indications, he's one of the first ones at the facility. Mm-hmm. One thing that struck me, too, is when the Redskins selected him, he was saying, I'm willing to play special teams. You don't hear a lot of draft picks saying that. A lot of draft picks, they want to make an immediate impact or they want to learn, whatever the standard answer is. But he said, I want to get on special teams. That reminds me of Lorenzo Alexander, somebody who is willing to play whatever role you stick him in. He's also a versatile linebacker, so he can play strong side, he can play weak side, he can play middle. And, you know, last time I checked, I know you got Sweat, who is a strong side, you got Bostic, you got Sean Dion Hamilton, Ryan Anderson, but, you know, while it might be a crowded linebacker court, is it the most talented group? We'll see under Ron Rivera, but I feel like he'll fit in well, and I feel like he'll, you know, be able to get on the field almost right away.
Well, I think that when you're looking at, like, Sweat's going to be defensive end. Like, so Sweat's not going to be a linebacker. He's going to play DN. Then you look at it's a crowded linebacker situation. So Hudson's a solid pick to me. Like, I won't even lie. Hudson's a solid pick. But at the same time, like, I don't look at him as a starter. You know, he has speed.
I don't either.
Sideline to sideline speed. But to me, he's a special teamer. Like, would he sit out, play special teams? To me, he's a special teamer. Could he get better? Yes, he can get better. But I don't look at him as a guy that can make an immediate impact, because watching him in Michigan, yeah, he flew all over the field. But in that last season, it was like a down season for him. You know, the year prior, he played pretty well, but last season was a down season. So, I mean, I think he needs to put on some meat. He needs to put on some weight, and he'll be a better football player. But in terms of, like, off the bat next season, unless you use him a certain way, maybe, you know, blitzing him at angles where he can get to the quarterback quicker, I don't look at him as a big impact player, but definitely a guy who's going to make the team, and a guy who can, I think it will be, his true value will be special teams. Will T?
I don't agree necessarily. I agree that he may not be a starter, but I feel as though with the linebacking core you have, again, your backups are Nate Orchard. I know that
Orchard's playing out. He's going to play, again, you're looking at it like, so Orchard's going to probably play DN. He won't even play a linebacker because they're moving to a 4-3. So there's a guy. So basically, your linebackers are going to be Reuben Foster.
So maybe a linebacker coin that Crowder then.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Reuben Foster. If Reuben Foster's healthy, Reuben Foster. You have, you got Tom, Davis. You got Davis. You got Sean Dion Hamilton. You got Holcomb.
Bostic.
So in terms of like what they, and you know, they may move Ryan Anderson to an outside linebacker. So you have like six backers, and so there is a. I mean, he can get playing time. I'm not saying he won't get playing time. He could be in the rotation. I don't look at him as a guy who's going to start. Now, they may be like packages for him, right? Because he has good speed. Like, he's a fast dude. He used to play safety. Like, Hudson used to play safety at the time.
Exactly.
So he has speed, and you know, you would think that he can cover a little bit. So there'll be packages for him. I'm not saying that there won't be packages for him, but I don't look at him right now in year one as a guy that at this point in time is going to be able to get a lot of playing time. That's just at the moment. Now, anything can happen barring injury.
Honestly, I respect your opinion. I think we agree on the fact that still make an immediate impact on special teams, mm-hmm. though, which was a need too. Every side of the ball is a need right now. Definitely.
Yeah. Will T, you got anything you want to say, Will T?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go with Antonio Gibson, the second round pick out of Memphis. Mm-hmm. He has a played running back, played wide receiver, has pretty good size at 6 feet for a wide receiver and a running back. His ability to be a dual threat for teams to not know exactly, where Washington is going to line him up on the, when he's on the field could create definite mismatch advantages for Washington. So I think he'll come in, they'll try to put together a package of plays for him, 5 to 10 plays per game. And then that way he'll make a difference, whether with the ball in his hand or just creating mismatches for other players to exploit.
Yeah, I like him too. I call him like a poor man's. I mean, if you're going to like compare players to certain other players, like Percy Harvin, how Percy Harvin was used in Minnesota. You can use him out the backfield, a guy who can, hopefully, again, we don't know if he's going to pan out to a Percy Harvin, but hopefully a guy that can, make the explosive play, because of his speed, and what he can do.
I think he's setting the bar too low, man. This is Washington. This is the off season. So you need to go crazy with the comparison.
Like who should I come out?
Christian McCaffrey.
See, I heard that. I don't like that, man. People have been saying that. I will not use that. I think Percy Harvin is fair. Like, Christian McCaffrey, that's a whole different monster.
This is the off-season Wally, Wole, Leather.
That's what I'm talking about, Will T. That's what I'm talking about.
So you need to go stir crazy with it. You need to say Christian McCaffrey.
No, I can't do this, man.
Ron Rivera, he was part of the regime that drafted Christian McCaffrey in Carolina. So he's trying to repeat the same thing here in D.C. So let's get people excited, man.
Yeah, I ain't gonna do
Christian
that.
McCaffrey, that's the comp.
I ain't gonna do that to these folks.
That's the comp.
Man. Yeah. I ain't gonna do that to these folks, man. I ain't about that. Like, I actually like the dude from Liberty, and Antonio Gandy Golden. Like, dude, he's like 6'4", wide receiver. I think he can be special. Like, I think dude can be special because he plays mean. I'm all about a wide receiver who plays mean. Like, Josh Dotson was a jump ball dude, but he ain't played mean, Trump when it was a jump ball. Like, this dude, from all the clips and the tapes and what I've heard, like, this dude plays, like, he attacks the football. You know what I'm saying? So
Did you watch that Santana Moss interview?
Nah. What was it? Tell me about it.
Oh, no. That's basically what he was discussing with
him. Saying,
You play so mean, you're a bully at receiver.
Yeah.
But let's not do this, please. We did this last year. It was a story draft, Jimmy Moreland. Listen, let's evaluate this thing, man, and let's let it play out, bro. I mean, I'm glad we're making predictions of who might be good, but let's not go too far with it at this point.
Jimmy Moreland,
you still got a young receiver core with a young receiver. With a young quarterback, that's going to take time to develop. I think optimism is too heavy right now, man. You drink the Kool-Aid every year.
Nah. Jimmy Moreland, again, Jimmy Moreland is a baller. I'm not going to get away from that. Like, he was coached by a bad defensive coordinator. Jimmy Moreland's a baller. I'm not going to,
I didn't say he wasn't. I'm just saying, like, it didn't turn out to be much. So let's give it time. I do like this coaching staff, but let's give it time. You know what I mean?
But everything has everything has its own little thing to it. Like, it's hard. Like, individual play. Like, some of these players, like Jimmy Moreland, to me, was coached by the wrong dude. I think if coached by the right dude, you would get the best out of Jimmy Moreland. You know what I'm saying? Like,
hey, Will, say you're saying, Will, if my aunt had blank, she'd be my uncle. Let's stop with the is that going. I'm trying to tell you, let's give it time. You're not listening.
I don't want to listen
what
to you.
Do every year, man. I love the enthusiasm, though, man.
You do the same thing about your squad. You make me out to be something different. Like, you do the same thing.
And that's always your comeback. Listen. You have not received one text from me. You text me about the Falcons not picking CeeDee Lamb. Because
I was so pissed off.
You don't hear from me.
Bruh.
Because I know what the deal is, man. I know what my team has,
team,
and I know what they need.
Your team should have drafted CeeDee Lamb. You going to make like the Cowboys
no,
get CeeDee Lamb?
No, for what?
Because you just stood up. You stood up. You shouldn't let the Cowboys get CeeDee Lamb. Like,
the Cowboys need it. The Cowboys are stupid because they need a defense. They're dumb. They needed defensive back help, and they didn't draft it in the first round when there was so much talent. In the first round, and I'm glad we went defense, but I wanted a linebacker. I didn't want or a pass rusher. I didn't want a corner. But anyway, it's all good. We're not talking about this is about the Washington football team, brother.
Hey, I posted the same question about the other draft picks on our platforms, on the Urban Sports Scene Twitter page, all our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page, and our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group, and on Twitter, at Marcusism, tweeted AGG talking about Gandy Golden. He has a great opportunity to start across from Terry McLaurin. I think he does have a good opportunity to start, you know, alongside Terry McLaurin. Adam on Twitter tweeted, watched more AGG film than any other prospect, but also watched a lot of Gibson pre-draft as well, and think he'll have an immediate impact, which is exciting. So that's
smart, man.
You know what I mean? So yeah, Gibson's a guy who could have a quick impact, you know, because he can run bubble screens and stuff like that. So things that aren't really on the route tree.
I mean, that was all part of my knowledge.
I got it, man. But look,
just repeating everything that I just said. So.
Look, man, dark skin dudes stick together, bro.
That is true.
Ain't it? We stick together, man. That's what I'm saying. So, yeah. All right, man. I guess I should go to break. I was going to talk about Randy Moss. Let's go to break. The Skins finally traded Trent Williams away. We'll discuss this after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene.
The Aegis.
You dig?
Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole. All right, the Skins. Hold on, there you go. All right, the Skins traded away Trent Williams, a seven-time Pro Bowler, Trent Williams, to the San Francisco 49ers for a fifth rounder, which ended up being Keith Ishmael, and a third rounder in 2021. Did the Skins lose this trade? Will,
I think so. Just for that reason, not just for the compensation they receive, but also you sending that man to Kyle Shanahan, who runs a perfect blocking scheme for what Trent Williams does. You reunite, well, you're not reunite, but you actually allowing Trent Williams to team up with Richard Sherman, man. You just giving this man fuel to ball, bro. I just feel like a team that just went to a Super Bowl, and now you adding Trent Williams, Garoppolo. He's going to greatly benefit from Trent Williams. Hopefully Trent Williams can stay healthy. So I think the 49ers definitely won the trade, no doubt.
I totally agree with Ray. Mm-hmm. Washington, I mean, they lost this trade for a number of reasons. One, you know, because of Bruce Allen's stubbornness last year. Yeah. You know, if the reports were true and they were offered a first-round pick for Trent Williams last year, they should have let him go.
Yeah.
Right. This year, Trent Williams was allowed to control the narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out in the media, for one. Two, him or his agent or someone on his side, let it get out that, you know, he tried to meet with Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera wouldn't even meet with him until he, after he met with Greg Olsen. And when he did meet with him, it was only like a 5-minute conversation.
Yeah.
So there was no way Washington could win this trade. And excuse me, and three, on top of that, Trent Williams has already said that he wouldn't come back to Washington. And he, I think I read somewhere, and I could be wrong, but he threatened to not play again, not show up for the first 10 games again this season, this upcoming season, and sit out until the last six. So Washington lost this trade big time. And I don't necessarily put it on the current regime. I put it on the previous regime, because when it became obvious that Trent Williams did not want to play for you, you should have got rid of him. And then, you know, you even put yourself in a worse position from a trade composition standpoint, because when he did show up last year, you deactivated him, right?
Yeah.
So, all in all, I just think, in my opinion, Washington just a terrible trade for them on their end.
Yeah, I agree with you, Will. I think because of the prior regime with Bruce Allen, you know, they really screwed the franchise in terms of, if reports are true, a first round pick was offered. You even had a second round pick offered, you know what I mean? So, and that wasn't taken. And now you're in this situation, you're giving up a third in 2021, and you're getting you got a fifth back for a 7-time Pro Bowler. And, you know, if healthy, is a top three left tackle. So you're losing value. I mean, you lost out in that trade. I mean, you just saw Jeremy Tunsil get like a three year extension for $66 million. So you know the value in that position is big, right? And he's Jeremy Tunsil, even as good as he's playing football now, isn't at Trent Williams' level when Trent is healthy. You know what I mean? So it's definitely a trade that they lost. I mean, you're looking at a guy that, and if the situation was, you know, wasn't as hostile, right? Or, you know, you had some leverage, you can get a first round pick for him, or a second round pick at the least a second round pick. But you gave up was a third and a fifth round pick. I guess with the situation how it was, to get a third round, I mean, to get a third round pick is okay. The fifth round pick, I just feel like, I mean, that's kind of hot. That's kind of like weak for a guy his caliber, but it is what it is. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's nothing they can really do with the situation. Now, in terms of with San Francisco, what they get out of it, I think Ray's correct, man. You get a left tackle playing in that Shanahan scheme with a mobile left tackle. And we all know in terms of that zone scheme, what Trent can do in that zone run scheme. It's endless, and this team just went to Super Bowl. Now it's up to, you know, their defense to stay the same, and, you know, Garoppolo to get better. But like in terms of that running game, it's going to be that much more fierce having Trent Williams. Now, granted, they lost Staley. Staley retired, but you replace Staley with a guy who is athletic and is powerful and as mean as Trent Williams. You know, San Francisco is in a position for the next couple of years. You know, and if they do extend Trent Williams, to really make some damage in the AFC, in the NFC West, and also the whole NFC and even the whole league, to be able to win a Super Bowl.
Hey, Will, I'm glad you're on the show. I brought this question up to Diane Cheeseborough months ago, and I'm going to just present it since we're talking about Trent Williams. I hope I'm not going too far off topic, but I asked the question, will Trent Williams be in the Redskins Ring of Fame at whatever stadium they're playing in? When he decides to retire, will he be welcomed back to the city by the organization and placed in the Ring of Fame along with the Daryl Greens, Brian Mitchells, Art Monks, you name it? Will he be there?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Absolutely not. Look, because of the way that it ended, I think they're going to be on Washington's side, I think they're going to be hurt feeling, particularly dating back to last year, right, when the accusations about the medical treatment and then also the way that the handling of his contract was handled and, you know, some of the statements that Trent, well, I'm not going to, you know, there's no need to rehash those statements, but if you go back and you, you know, just read and you look, you know, look at some of the statements he made about, you know, the organization and then, you know, his treatment, I think that it's created a sense of hostility. And then, you know, with him almost dictating where he's going to go, you know, some reports saying that Minnesota bowed out. Minnesota was willing and wanting to
He bowed out of Minnesota.
But Trent Williams kind of forced his hand on that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he'll be welcomed back and into the Ring of Honor, specifically for, you know, the way things ended. And then also you have to look at the amount of time that he missed and the suspensions due to marijuana.
Well, I didn't think about that part, but I do believe in the saying that time heals wounds. Brian Mitchell, obviously he played for Philly. He didn't spend his entire career here, and he even was fired by Dan Snyder at one point on the radio, or his contract wasn't renewed. He still accepted that honor to the Ring of Honor. And then on the basketball side, you got Shaq, who, look what he did to Orlando. You know,
yeah.
He dipped out, won championships, but, you know, Orlando over time was able to welcome, the Magic was able to welcome him back, and he had his jersey retired. So I think it's a possibility, but I'm not going to completely disagree and say, you know, no, he's definitely coming back to be in the Ring of Honor. I don't know, but he is definitely a great Redskin. I do think he's one of those guys who I could see living in the area in the future. He did, you know, show some love for the fans, and even Dan Snyder, once the trade was finally complete. So there's a chance, definitely. But I think Bruce Allen was his main target and who his main grudge was against. And with Bruce Allen out the way, I believe that can still happen, because his best years are and have been and will be in Washington, bottom line.
Yeah. Go, Will T. Go ahead.
I agree with you. His best years, you know, have been in Washington. But, you know, if you were Trent, let's play the hypothetical game, even though I don't like to play this game. Trent Williams, you're going to play with the coach who was a part of the regime that originally drafted you.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect system for you. There's opportunity for you to get a Super Bowl, right?
True.
You probably got like three or four good years left in you before you leave the game. Who's to say, you know, if he doesn't have four successful years in San Fran, wins a Super Bowl, and, you know, gets into the Hall of Fame, who's to say that he doesn't want to put the Washington year behind him and come and be going to the halls of the San Francisco 49ers. Look at Champ Bailey. You know, I think these are two different extremes,
mm-hmm.
but, you know.
No, I think.
Let's look at.
Valid. Everything you're saying is valid.
Valid.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, that's why we're talking about it. That was the second part of my question. When he does, because he is a Hall of Famer, by the way, when he does enter the hall, are Redskins fans going to come out in droves like they did for Daryl Green or Mug? I remember that. It was crazy. So it'll be interesting, man, because I do think he was a fan favorite. He was your lone Pro Bowl, and he stuck with his organization through some tough times,
Tough times. Well, it's funny how fans can turn on you, though, bro. It is what it is. Like, now since all this drama has happened, you know, people have turned on him. Like, fans have turned on him. I posed a question on, like, Facebook and whatnot. You got folks who said it, like...
I mean, not just the fans, but some of the media.
Yeah, though. It's the truth. The media's turned on him.
If you listen to the local sports,
mm-hmm.
the biggest sports, I'm not going to say the biggest, but, mm-hmm. you know... The, I'm not going to say it's the biggest, but, you know, if you listen to certain personalities in this region, you know, they are very adamant about, you know, let him go. We don't need him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh yeah, I understand it. And you know what? We're emotional as people. I get it. And we're not rational. We're emotional. Wally always talks about Atlanta when I'm arguing about Washington. Hey, listen, I'll bring in a Falcon example. Deion came back to Atlanta. He beat up Andre Rison. He returned a pick six and did his dance in the end zone in a 49er uniform, bro. Like, it don't get no worse than that. and still to this day. He is still an icon in Atlanta, brother. True. I mean, it don't matter. Michael Vick went to Philadelphia and did some amazing things, bro. And it was hard to watch at times, but he's still an icon in Atlanta. Mm. Brother, time will heal wounds. Trust me. I get it, though. At the time when Vick was in jail, I was like, you know what? It's time to move on.
Mm.
Definitely. So I get it.
So on Facebook post, I posed the question, how would you remember Trent Williams? Donica Stevens, she commented and put, blaming the staff for the alleged cancerous lump on his head and was not treated. Not being potty trained. People are tough, man. Like, fans are tough. Like, again, like, you get to a guy who's been here, like you said, again, like Will and Ray, like a guy that's been here and, you know, and been a fan favorite for so long, and all in 2 years, you know, has kind of fallen in favor to some fans. Because, again, when we look at the situation, you know, the Skins were at fault. You know, that medical staff was at fault. I mean, Trent had some involved in it, but all in all, like, to me, that medical staff was at fault for how they treated that situation. And, you know, fans kind of have forgotten that. And, you know, the way Trent has carried the situation for trying to get out of D.C., fans look at, they lean on that. And it's sad, though. It is sad.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't necessarily I'm not going to say everything he did was wrong. Mm-hmm. There's some things that he said or the way that he acted didn't necessarily help the situation.
Yeah.
But it just my reaction from, you know, talking to people and hearing, you know, certain sports talk radio hosts talking in this region, it was like, you know, when Trent wasn't here or when he declared that he didn't want to be here, it's like this whole city, I'm not going to say the whole city, but some people switched up on him.
They did. They did switch up on him. It's a fact. They switched up on him. And, you know, to a point you tried to a point where it was like, get him out of here for basically peanuts. You know what I mean? Like, that's where it got to. It, like, get him out of here. We don't want to deal with the drama. You know what I mean? Hey, they give us a fourth round pick, we should trade him. I'm like, yo, pump your brakes. You know what I mean? Value is value. But that's how delusional folks are with the whole Williams situation. I mean, and hopefully, he has a great career in San Francisco. I wish him the best. All sides can move on, and, you know, hopefully everybody's happy. All right, Sunday's episodes of The Last Dance featured Dennis Rodman and Phil Jackson. We'll talk about episode 3 and 4 after the break. You listen to Urban Sports Scene.
Ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy. I'm getting these guys on. All right. Episode 3 and 4 of The Last Dance aired Sunday. Episode 3 featured the story of Dennis Rodman on that team. Thoughts on episode 3?
I'll start, of course. highlighting that, just specific to these, well, I guess you said episode 3. Dennis Rodman, what I loved about the episode was that Michael Jordan recognized that he needed Dennis Rodman.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about somebody who is going to come out and create his own shots or get others involved. We're talking about a guy who is, just an unfathomable, you know, rebounder,
mm-hmm.
defender. And without Scottie Pippen, Jordan said, I need you.
Yeah.
You know, that's just unheard of. It's like Kawhi going to Patrick Beverley almost. Even though I don't like that comparison,
because yeah,
I know Dennis Rodman was special.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, going to a guy like Joe Kim Noah and say, I need you. We going to do this together without our other star. Like, the fact that a guy that plays the style of play that Dennis Rodman did could even make up a big three is just dope. and the fact that Jordan was willing to also deal with what else came with him, you know, the trips, the drinking, all of that, and saying, you know what, I'll work with it, you know, because I know I need this dude. I just think that that was so dope, man, because we see Jordan's ego play out. We see him thinking that he can will his team to a championship, but he realized early on that season that he couldn't do it by himself, obviously, because they struggled out the gate. So I just feel like that was amazing.
A couple things I took away from the Rodman episode. One, you know, when Dennis Rodman was in Detroit, none of that behavior that we've come that he's become famous for was present.
Mm-hmm.
So it made me think, is it, you know, the pressure? Was it the pressure of being on those other teams that kind of changed Dennis Rodman's persona, or was it that the lack of, I guess, family, you know, in Detroit, you know, not only in that episode, but then, you know, hearing, you know, Isaiah Thomas speak on other forums, it was, you know, in Detroit, it was almost like a family type, you know, where we policed each other and we cared for each other like a family. That's the first thing. Second thing, Dennis Rodman was truly a student of the game and, you know, studied at his craft. One thing that he doesn't get the recognition for is being one of, if not being one of the probably five best on-ball post defenders,
mm-hmm.
you know, ever in the history of the NBA. And, you know, to hear him talk about, you know, how, you know, he studied the trajectory and the spin when certain players shot the ball and being able to go, you know, mm-hmm. Knowing where to be and tip the ball to himself to get the rebound. That was amazing.
It was, man.
You know, and in itself. And then also to piggyback off of Ray, you know, hearing the humility from Michael Jordan, which is something, you know, most people don't associate with Michael Jordan for some reason. You know, him saying that he needed Dennis Rodman, a guy who, you know, who they didn't run any plays for. Probably didn't run any sets for, but, you know, his defensive presence and his energy, you know, to help him. Michael Jordan, who, you know, some people say is the GOAT, the greatest player ever, to help him, you know, to help keep the boat steady while Scottie Pippen was out. It was good insight into, you know, Michael Jordan as a teammate mm-hmm. and then also Dennis Rodman as a man and a person and a player.
But isn't it refreshing, though? It's refreshing to see that, you know, we're in an era where everybody thinks that you got to score 30 to be an impact player, or you got to score 25 or 25 and 10 to be an impact player, that you got a dude that rebounds at the highest level, defends at the highest level, but that could be known, deemed like a piece of a big three. Like, you look at, like, I'll use an example, like the Cleveland Cavaliers, right? A player like Kevin Love scores like 20 and 10. Which you look at it on the stat book, like, oh, that's amazing. Like, that's a vicious dude as your third piece. But he's not even close to, like, the impact of a Dennis Rodman.
Well, you know, when you saying that, you understand that you also got to appreciate a guy like Draymond Green, then, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do appreciate Draymond.
We don't like him necessarily, but because the way he presents himself, like Dennis Rodman presented himself like he knew who he was.
Yeah.
Draymond act like he's a star that leads this team. He doesn't.
Yeah.
But he's an important part, man. You got to appreciate that. And I think this Dennis Rodman episode kind of validated that. And just real quick, the comment on something Will said, I think Dennis Rodman buried his demons. If you watched that episode, you heard about how he grew up. You know, he was put out the house at a young age. And then also you saw at the end of his career, end of his tenure in Detroit, he had like a gun in the vehicle. They thought that he might be suicidal. So it was starting to come out. His life was starting to unravel. His demons were starting to show. It's just, it took some time. So I don't think he created this persona. I think it was there. It's just, you know, he was able to conceal it or suppress it, and it just came out.
Nah, when I look at Dennis Rodman too. Well, I don't like comparing Dennis Rodman to Draymond, though. You trying to say they're the same player?
No, not at all. I'm just saying that. You know, the fact that you were saying it's refreshing that a big three can have somebody like Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, I agree.
That means that Draymond Green, for all that he brings to the Warriors, even though maybe he's not Steph or Klay, he's still very much important to that team.
Oh,
annoying as he may be. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Now, can they win without Draymond? Probably. Just like the Bulls won championships without Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that the fact that if we appreciate Dennis Rodman, I guess in hindsight, then we got to appreciate what Draymond does for his squad. When KD was out last playoffs, I mean, he was running that point forward. He looked good and doing it. Definitely. You know, it's just that, again, maybe his personality rubs a lot of people the wrong way. But at the end of the day, I mean, you got to respect and compare his, you know, contributions to Draymond's, yes, or to Dennis Rodman, I'm sorry, because it's very comparable, although we'll probably all agree that Dennis Rodman was, you know, a more superior player or more important to his team, I guess.
No, I think that's a very good comparison when you look at a big three, right? You're looking at Draymond Green. I guess we like the issue with Draymond compared to Dennis. Like, Dennis Rodman knew his role. Like, he never tried to act like, oh, I'm better than the next person. Like, oh, I'm better than that person over here. Like, he never heard Dennis Rodman say, I'm better than Barkley, or I'm better than whatever. But he knew how important his role was to his team. It wasn't like Rodman was going, you know, was talking that wasn't, well, Rodman wasn't talking trash for real. Rodman was just playing basketball. And Draymond is a little bit mouthy to a certain extent. And it's like,
oh,
he valued himself over, like, for instance, like, Draymond valued himself over Kevin Durant. You know what I mean? Like, feeling like he can talk dirty to Kevin Durant. You never heard, like, Draymond talking sideways about Jordan or Pippen, or talking sideways about Isaiah and Dumars. You know what I mean? So it's just like, it's just different. But I'm with you, though, in terms of being valued in terms of that big three spot. And not being a scorer, and not being a scorer, and just being a defender, rebounder, you know, that tells a lot of people that, you know what, you don't have to score 30 points to be impactful. You know what I'm saying? Like, to be more impactful than players that do score 20 and 30, because their 20 and 30 may be meaningless compared to what you're doing defensively and rebounding the basketball.
Also, I've always been vigilant of this, but people do not give the Detroit Pistons,
a
team
I agree,
that won back-to-back championships. They don't get their just due in the annals of history.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you think about it, you know, those teams, they beat up on Jordan, you know, when he was trying to ascend out of the East.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Magic. They beat Clyde Drexler, and they also beat they overcame the Boston Celtics.
Mm-hmm. It's impressive.
It's impressive, and Isaiah Thomas does not get it. No, Isaiah Thomas just never gets his due. I've always been a huge fan of Isaiah Thomas.
I agree.
And I know why he doesn't get his due is because people have a certain bias towards Michael Jordan.
Of course.
But it's. I don't know. I just don't know why, you know, those Detroit Pistons teams and Isaiah Thomas don't get their just due.
Well, it's because of people like you. You're biased by Isaiah Thomas, but you'll be the first one to say two back-to-back championships is not a dynasty. So if it's not a dynasty, people ain't going to talk about it.
No. You're misconstruing my words. I said it is a. I said you have to win back-to-back championships to be a dynasty. You're taking it out of context. No, because I'm going to tell you exactly why you're taking it. Because we had the conversation years ago about those Spurs teams with Tim Duncan. Were they a dynasty? And I said, no, they weren't a dynasty because they never won back-to-back championships. Don't misconstrue my words, sir.
All right, I'm gonna let you have that, but I'm telling you, we can go back to some tapes when the Heat won back-to-back and you said they weren't a dynasty.
I don't think that's what I said.
But, I mean, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, you know. But Wally immediately agreed because he remembers it the way I do. But it's okay, though. You know what I mean?
Nothing. I'm out of this shit, dog. Don't put me into it. I'm out of it.
No. I'm glad this is recorded.
Yeah, because I stated, because the conversation was about those Spurs teams. We said when those Spurs teams, they were a dynasty. Because Wally said the Spurs team were a dynasty.
Yeah, I believe they were a dynasty.
I said I don't believe they're a dynasty because they never won back-to-back championships. In order to be a dynasty, you need to win back-to-back championships, in my opinion.
Well, I think also I will agree with you to some level. Because I remember you saying the same thing about Golden State. Because at one point, Golden State didn't win back-to-back. They were in the finals, of course. They won those 73 games,
yes,
and they lost.
Yeah.
So you did say that about them as well. I think that's where the conversation derived from. But like I said, from my recollection, while I'm at this point maybe wrong, I thought that's what you said. I don't think that the Pistons are a dynasty though. I mean, I know they won back to back championships, but I don't agree they're a dynasty, and I don't think that they're one of the top teams in history. The Showtime Lakers, the Bulls, the Heat, the Warriors, you can put all of them ahead of that Pistons group. I mean, for real, Chauncey Billups' Pistons went back to back finals, and I know they didn't win the second one, but still, are we talking about them still? No. You know, and the personalities on the team don't, I think, work either, because we'll talk more about the 1 year Kevin Garnett won with Boston we will about Isaiah Thomas' Pistons, because the personalities, their brand of basketball, the stuff that they got away with, they said it throughout the whole documentary. It wouldn't work today. You can't just tackle somebody, intensely push somebody. You know, that stuff doesn't work today. Now, maybe some people might say this era is solved, but still.
No,
I think they just left a bad taste.
For me, like, I think they're a dynasty. I think that if you put that team in terms of even with talent and what they did in that era, like, no other team really has ever done what they did. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you saying you went through Larry Bird Celtics, you went through Magic Johnson and Kareem and Worthy, that Lakers squad. You held down an ascending Michael Jordan. You beat like Will mentioned Clyde Drexler in the final. Like, you beat, like, you look at the resume. That resume, in terms of, I'm going to represent Isaiah Thomas as like the leader of that, for that resume, right? Because we do that with all the all-time greats. There aren't many all-time great players that have that kind of resume.
Right.
Dudes they've knocked out. Like, to me, that's an element of greatness, dude. Like, so to Will's point, I think Isaiah and that Pistons team is the most underrated team, because your second, and it's not a knock on Joe Dumars. Joe Dumars, when that 50 greatest list came out, he was on that list. So I don't want to shortchange Joe Dumars. Joe Dumars was a great basketball player. But when we look at like to what Ray's talking about, when we were looking at all-time great teams, you don't think about the Pistons. You don't. You don't think about the Pistons because of the star power. You don't think about the Pistons. But when you look at the team and what they did in that era. And we talk about all-time great teams. We're not even talking about average teams. Like, we talk about all-time great teams in the 80s. Like, the Celtics were our all-time great team. That Lakers team was an all-time great team. The Bulls, the aura of Michael Jordan, people thought it was his time. They held that down. Like, that is impressive. You know what I mean? I think if you're a basketball fan, there aren't any, any highlighted players that have that resume. There aren't.
Yo,
and then you
I agree. Go ahead, my bad, bro.
No, and then you put on top of it, you know, in the East they also had Dominique Wilkins,
Atlanta
Hawks team, and people don't give them credit, but the Cleveland Cavaliers team that had Ron, you know, those teams had Ron Harper,
Mark Harper's hilarious,
Craig Elo, John Hot Rod Williams, Larry Nance, Brad Doherty. That was a good team.
Ron Harper's hilarious. He was like, Craig Elo's going to check him, Craig Elo? You going to have Elo check him? Really? Elo's going to check Jordan? Not me? All right.
Well, I agree with you guys. I mean, it's the perception, you know. Yeah. It's the reputation that has hurt that team. I mean, Isaiah's still salty. But what I didn't like in the aftermath of those two episodes, I should say, was Bill Laimbeer coming out saying, well, the Bulls beat us when we got old. And then there's others, you know, who will say, well, Jordan got Magic when he was old.
Yeah.
Magic was in his 11th year. Isaiah Thomas was in his 10th year. Bill Laimbeer was in his 12th year. It's like, I watched Shaq in his 12th and 13th year. His 12th year, he went out and almost dominated the Pistons, even though they lost that finals because he didn't get the ball enough.
Yeah.
He won in his 14th year a title with Miami. Like, come on, man. This whole we got old nonsense, it's an excuse, bro. Like you weren't going to hold Jordan down for so long because he was just that good. And, you know, just your plan just to hit him every time.
Yeah.
All he needed was the right coach, and that's what happened. They changed their philosophy. He ended up trusting his teammates, and that changed the game. But to say, oh, we got old, please, man. They weren't old yet, man. It's just an excuse because, you know, They weren't as good, and they weren't as athletic, point blank.
Magic was older. I mean, his play. I use eye test. I don't do that whole whatever. You look at the eye test, right? Magic was different from what he was in 84, 85. He was just different. He was a different basketball player. I can't speak for Bill. Bill Laimbeer is a role player, so I tend not to go off role players. When we look at, like, yeah, Magic was a different player. I think that was said. Well, you can watch the series. You can and look at clips of the other series in the '80s. He's a different basketball player. He just was. It's not a knock on Jordan because I think Jordan got better as a basketball player in 93. I think Jordan's a better basketball player than he was in 91, 92, and 93. I think 93 was a better basketball player. So can Jordan in 93 win in the '80s? Maybe. We don't know. You know what I'm saying? So, I just think that, you know, there's certain players, you hit them in their prime, then we can have that discussion about, like, would they win this, when they were that, would they win that? But I don't get into all that. But the fact of the matter is, in any era, like, you wait your time. You wait your turn. You know what I mean? That was Jordan's turn, and he took it.
Well, Magic will defend himself because, obviously, he played on the Dream Team. Now, he still maybe wasn't the same guy he was in his rookie season. But he still felt like he was a top guy in the NBA. Yeah. I mean, and he recognized. He said it on the documentary, and he said in numerous interviews, you know, I knew that it was time to pass the torch. Now, my thing is, again, and you're a Magic defender. I get it. You know what I'm saying? If you still think Magic is the best player ever, you're crazy, especially after watching the documentary. But
the documentary doesn't prove anything against Magic at all, to be real with you.
No, I ain't saying it proves anything against Magic, but I just feel like it's just a reminder of who Michael Jordan was. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. But
not really, but go ahead. Continue.
both were transcendent, right? I mean, Magic Johnson, we never saw a point guard at his size, you know, and could pass like he could, of course. And MJ, the athleticism to handle.
Of course.
I mean, but look at the accolades. Look at all the things that he won. Defensive player of the year, dunk contest, MVP, all-star game MVP. He won everything. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't see that anymore. And the odds were stacked against him. That's what I'm saying. I feel as though that's an excuse there. The age was an excuse. So maybe players weren't built back then like they are today. I think that's probably something that factors in. But I know it's a lot of factors that go into it. I kind of, again, tend to feel as though, you know, the Bulls kind of ushered in that era where you do work on your body, where you do look to gain muscle. You know what I'm saying? You do look to change your physical condition as opposed to you saw how Larry Bird and them looked back in the day. You know what I mean? And I mean, it is what they were flabby out there balling. However, their fundamentals, their team ball was different.
It's
so,
real.
You know, I think it's a great matchup because I always reference that Celtics Hornets matchup where the young Larry Johnson, Alonzo Mourning, they came in swole. You know what I'm saying? the physique was on point. They were way more athletic. Kendall Gill, come on now, them dudes was athletic. But they got schooled though. So I'm not saying that Jordan would necessarily in Magic's prime would fry him, so to speak. But come on, man, what we have is what we have, and that is they matched up in the finals. And Magic wasn't that old, in my opinion. Again, his 11th year in the league. Jordan was in his seventh or eighth at the time. It's not that big of a difference.
Magic got in the league in 79. Jordan got in the league.
Magic came in at 80.
79-80 season. Believe me, I know, bro.
Right.
79-80 season. So
right. And when Jordan came in with 84, right?
Like
84. So it's a 4-year difference.
Yeah.
I said, Michael Jordan was just, he was just that
I'm
dude,
I'm just telling
man.
You,
period.
Man. It's just, it is, what, if you watch, it's the eye test. It's not a Magic Jordan debate, but it's the eye test, bro. If you watch Magic in the, like, it's factual. If you watch Magic in the mid-80s to the 91-92 season, and if you look at all the press clippings of that season, like, it was a miracle for that team to even get to the finals. Like, real talk, the Trailblazers should have beat them in that series. They weren't even favored to get to the finals. So I'm just telling you, like, that he wasn't the same dude. James Worthy was older. Like, they weren't even the same team. They relied on Vlade Divac. Like, it really wasn't the same team. Like, it wasn't the same player, same team. And again, it's not a knock on Jordan. He beat Magic. Magic was still, and to your point, a top player in the league. So I'm not taking that away. I'm not saying he wasn't. I'm just saying we talk about the same Magic against Jordan. It's not that they're not the same. There isn't the same Magic that we all know about. You know what I'm saying? That's all that I'm saying. It's not a knock on it.
True. They matched up, though. They matched up early on in their career still. But I'm just saying, I'm not going to necessarily disagree. But like I said, Magic's your favorite player, so I understand. You have to do what you have to do. You're crazy, but you have to do what you have to do.
I'm not crazy, dude. It is what it is. Hey, man, look, we'll see you. Phil Jackson, man, do you have any respect for Phil Jackson as a coach watching the documentary?
Absolutely. 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 Look, what people felt like, listen, Phil Jackson's won 9 championships, right? But what people fail to realize is that the biggest thing that Phil, outside of you know, bringing in the triangle offense, right? In an era where people just primarily ran ISO.
Mm-hmm.
The second best thing, you know, the second biggest thing Phil Jackson did was he developed a team concept around generationally great players.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, we all know that the NBA is built off of the superstar and what the superstar wants, the superstar gets, and they dictate any and just about everything associated with the team.
Mm-hmm.
But what Phil Jackson has done at every stop is he has challenged his star generational talented players to incorporate more of a team aspect of into the organ, you know, into that program. And also he has managed those egos and he's done it greatly. He's got them to be able to buy in.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never been a person who bought into the whole, well, Phil Jackson's only won championships with, you know, great players. No, Phil Jackson, tell me a coach who hasn't won without a great player.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Outside of Larry Brown, right?
Yeah.
That Pistons team.
Yeah, I agree.
But every other coach has won with like a great player.
Yo,
so I've always respected Phil.
So somebody needs to let Scott Brooks in on that secret. You know what I'm saying? Because it seems like he just defers to Bradley Beal and John Wall or whoever.
It's so
and true. Dude, we're talking about Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, Shaq, Kobe. We're talking about star players that Phil got the best out of, like you said, Will. And yet today we're seeing guys who still are able to dictate, yet they don't even come close to the Bulls teams or the Lakers teams.
Mm-hmm.
So it's crazy what Phil was able to achieve. So the coaches of today should definitely be taking notes, including the one here in Washington.
Yeah, I agree. Like actually, to be real with you, just watching the documentary, and even if it's a short sample size, it could have been more about Phil. I got more respect for Phil just watching this documentary and seeing what, you know, how he changed, like, Jordan. I mean, and Tex Winters, too, right? They both deserve credit, right? Because Tex Winters wanted this team to play team ball. But to have those two work together and even to fire Doug Collins, a guy who just got into the Eastern Conference Finals, to make that move. And Jerry Krause deserves credit, too, right? Like, to make that kind of move. Like, I know a lot of people hating on him, but he deserves a lot of credit to fire a dude who just got you to the Eastern Conference Finals and say, you know what, this dude right here who's waiting has the ability to get this team to the championship. You know what I mean? Like, that's impressive, to be honest with you. But, yeah, looking at how Phil Jackson pushed buttons, I mean, knowing that everybody isn't equal as a coach is very important to me. Like, when I look at a coach, like, to say, hey, Dennis, go take your couple days in Vegas, come back, and because he knew that would be good for Dennis Rodman. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of coaches wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? Knowing that we need Dennis to be right. So we're going to have him go to Vegas, and we'll still be okay. We'll still hold the ship down. And you know what I mean? And when you get back, you know what I'm saying, we know you'll be all right. That's beautiful coaching to me, man, because it tells you, right, that, one, not everybody, you can't coach everybody the same. I know a lot of people want things to be fair or whatnot, but everybody doesn't get the same rules. You know what I mean? And for Bill to acknowledge that and go with it, man, all credit to him, man. That's some great coaching.
Oh, man. There's some luck involved there, too. That don't work for everybody.
But if he knew his dude, though. That's what I'm saying. He knew his dude.
He related to Dennis more than what we knew. I think that was a big reveal from the episode where they show Phil how he was this quirky dude. You know what I'm saying? His lifestyle before he became a coach, it was wild to see how him and Dennis Rodman was alike. He was like a rebel. You know, they called him a hippie.
Yeah.
So he was being very relatable. Definitely, I think that works. But like I said, there's some examples out here when it doesn't work, man.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown is one of them. Shoot. But anyway... I still think, you know, you're right, to a large degree. I won't disagree there. But he got lucky that didn't blow up in his face. He lucky that the man came back from Vegas, you know.
Well, Jordan got
one piece.
But Jordan got him. That's all.
I know Jordan went and got him.
But Jordan told him though. Jordan told him though. Hey, he ain't coming back, Phil. He ain't coming back.
Right. Crazy. But it was a different culture back then, as we see, you know, with the way hotel rooms and drugs and, you know, snorting lines and all that. You don't see that in today's NBA. We know that people still party. You know, shout out to Fred Smoot, the party boat. You know, stuff still happens. Michael Irvin had their little drug ring going on, but, you know, these group of athletes today just definitely seem like they do things on a different level, on a much cleaner scale. So, you know, we're talking about different times, too. So I don't think it's comparable to now. You know what I'm saying?
No, actually, I want to correct the mistake I made. I said Phil Jackson only had 9 rings. He has 11 rings.
Oh, definitely.
That's first of all. And second, you know, I've always respected Phil Jackson, but one of the reasons, you know, once you, you know, it's kind of like once you learn more about a person, mm-hmm. you get a greater understanding of their path and, you know, how they view the world. And
yeah.
One of the reasons why I respect him a lot more is because I actually read his book, 11 Rings, mm-hmm. The Soul of Success. It's a pretty interesting read. If you're a sports fan, you should definitely check it out.
Oh, you enjoy the book? You said you enjoy the book?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read it like three years ago.
No, I mean, he's a well-rounded individual in terms of like well-versed in terms of like his knowledge in terms of culture and whatnot. I mean, watching this documentary, I gained a lot of respect for Phil Jackson. You know what I mean? And just the grind to be a head coach. You know what I'm saying? The grind to achieve a dream and a goal. Nah, man, like Phil Jackson deserves a lot of credit in terms of what he's done in this league. And you know, and I used to be the first dude to tell you, like, yeah, man, he had Jordan Pippen, he had Shaq and Kobe. He ain't been a Larry Brown. Larry Brown like can win with nobodies. But at the same time, man, like, it's hard to coach stars, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, stars don't like to listen to you. You're all right. You saw Jordan's temperament. He was like, nah, man. You know, there's an I and win. You know what I'm saying? You saw his temperament. So to make that dude change his mindset, say, hey, you're going to need your teammates. And for you to win a championship, you're going to have to help Scotty get better, you know, pass the ball to Scotty. Let Scotty get advantages in the triangle offense. We're not going one-on-one with you and whatnot. You know, to me, that's coaching, man. That's coaching at its finest.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
All right, man. We're going to lock this show down. Good show, fellas. I'm impressed. Ray was trying to get at me with the Magic Johnson thing on the low, though, real talk. I don't know why you did that. That wasn't even cool. Like the whole Magic Johnson.
I was talking about Lane Beer and Magic Johnson because they make it seem like Jordan caught them at a bad time. Like, please.
We're not doing that right now. All right.
Oh, that was it.
Hey, man. Hey, Will T, you got anything you want to say before we let the show go?
No, it was good having all three of us together.
It is, man. It's a pleasure, you know, man. It's a great thing.
It's a pleasure. I always enjoy engaging with both of you guys every Tuesday at 8 o'clock, do the show. So yeah, you know, people just stay safe, stay healthy, man. And, you know, let's not, try to force things and get out of the house earlier than we need to be.
Preach,
you know,
preach. Ray, you want to say anything to the people, Ray? I'm putting you on the spot. No.
Nah, I'm done, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate you guys. Y'all can check me out, though. Hit me up on Twitter, man. I've been on several shows lately, so,
oh,
you know, just look for me.
He a star, man. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. All right, man. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You did.
Deuces.
Hey, Meg, lead us out, big homie.